Welcome to the Henry Cuenca Radio Show on KKRN Community Radio, licensed in Bella Vista, California, and transmitting from Round Mountain. Here, we explore the lives of triumphant humans who endure life's persistent challenges. Our guests are driven by passion and inspiration and live with a compelling sense of purpose. Their persistence, perseverance are brought on by tragic episodes or by wonderfully cradled lives. But for whatever reasons, guests will openly share their innermost feelings and beliefs that fuel their works. With determination, courage, and insistence, our guests are driven to put more into life than they take out. Please listen to how these inspirational stories may be closely related to your own. And yes, I am Henry Cuenca. Today's guest is a testament to the hope and strength that sustains survivors. Gina, abused by a parent at an early age, running the family household by cooking, paying bills, and mothering her brother and sister, while her mother, addicted to pain medications, laid in bed in the living room. Her life outside the home also provided challenges. She was bullied and made fun of by schoolmates for having paralyzed half face due to Bell's palsy. Despite all she faced, she persisted in life seeking redemption simply by receiving praise from middle school teachers and by her own grandparents extending a sense of family and self-worth. Herself a mother at 21, she found the inner strength to achieve high-level graduate education, as well as starting for her children and her community that provided the love and support she seldom received. Listen with me to this remarkable, heartwarming story. Gina Woznica, welcome to today's show.
Thank you for having me today.
Well, Gina, you have a remarkable story to tell. And why don't we start off by you conveying to us all of the wonderful programs that you've initiated within the community through the Reading Recreation.
Uh-huh. Yes.
And tell us about your grasshopper sports to start with. That sounds really interesting.
Okay. Well, this program started 20 years ago. We actually are doing a celebration this September to celebrate 20 years of grasshopper sports program. And through that program, we've offered soccer, baseball, basketball, football, kickball, and a couple of annual events that we have.
I hope you're athletic.
I actually am not athletic. I wasn't able to play sports as a child. We didn't have enough money. And so when I had my own children and the opportunity came about, I was so passionate about it and wanted to have those experiences for my own kids, as well as to be able to share those with kids in the community.
Would you say then, Gina, that the true inspiration for these outreach programs really was embedded in the fact that your children maybe never had this type of exposure as they were growing up?
I did it for my children. Myself as a child, I did not get any of those experiences. And so I felt that when I had my own children, I was going to give them every opportunity that I never had as a child. Uh-huh. I didn't get to do Girl Scouts. I didn't get to play sports in school. It was too expensive. And so when my children were born, I wanted to make sure that I had those opportunities for them, as well as for kids in our own community. Mm-hmm. And so when my first child was about 4 years old, my supervisor and I sat down and we were talking about programs that we could offer for kids. And that was one that we came up with. And again, we're celebrating 20 years. We've had over 11,000.
11,000 students that have gone through your program.
Yep.
So it's a hallmark within the community.
2 to 5 year olds. I have kids that come up to me that are 21 years old now, 24
Gina,
years old.
You don't look much older than 21. Really?
Yes.
So what do these kids, these children that run into you that you had taught in former years, what do they tell you? What do they say?
Well, when they're 21, 24, they don't quite remember. Sometimes they do. Mm-hmm. And they just remember it being a really fun experience, their first exposure to sports. Sometimes their first exposure to a social interaction with other kids.
So tell us a little bit more as to, you had a collaborative, an associate that worked with you in these programs back in 1998. Tell us a little bit more how this program really got started between you two and the steps that you were going to take to promote this through the city.
Well, so starting right before 1998, Albertsons closed, which is where I worked when I had my first two children. And when Albertsons closed, I sort of went, what am I going to do? And so many people, when I worked at Albertsons, kept telling me I need to work with kids. And then one day, somebody brought me a flyer that Reading Recreation was hiring, and they wanted people to run classes. Mm-hmm. So I went to the city of Reading, and I got a job. And
so they hired you right on the spot then?
They hired me, yes. And I took over some programs that were already running. Mm-hmm. One program was the Tiny Tots program, and my daughter was so ready to go to preschool. So she got to go to preschool, and I worked in the building right next door with my 8-month-old daughter. And I created a class called Giggle Bugs. And we. Giggle Bugs.
Giggle.
Bugs. Uh-huh. Yes. And so I took my 8-month-old to work with me, and we sang songs, and I read stories, and we interacted with other moms and other kids. And it was wonderful. And my other daughter got to go to preschool right in the next building next to me.
Jeez, everything was working out very, very nicely for you.
It was very great. And then I also started attending Shasta College, and I started their ECE program. So everything that I was doing with the work, with the school, and having my kids taught me how to be a better parent, mm-hmm. because I was taking the ECE classes. It was helping me grow the experiences with the city of Reading because of what I was learning at Shasta College. So I was able to offer
in tandem.
Right. Mm-hmm. Everything just worked beautifully. I feel like I had the greatest job ever because my kids got to go to work with me. I was doing things that were so fun. And during those first few years, I did Giggle Bugs. I did tumbling with kids. We started the Grasshopper program. We started another program called Toddler Travels where moms or dads, I would set up field trips for 6 weeks. And every week we would have a field trip to a certain place in Reading. And whether people were new to the town or they've been here, but they never really got out and explored because they have this new kid, it was an opportunity for me to have a structured place for us. And we would go out and we might walk the river trail, or I took them out to the sheriff's boat station where the sheriffs took us out on their boats. And again, I sat there one day and thought, this is my job. This is so cool.
This is just a lot of fun.
It was. And my kids didn't have to go to daycare. Right. They got to be with me and they got to experience so much. And as they grew, they learned about volunteering because we had activities that were for volunteering. And the being with the city has been one of the greatest gifts in my life. Plus, I was able to go to school. So it took me 15 years to get through schooling.
And Gina, just as a little sidebar, what was the foundation or the compelling sense that you wanted to go to school? I mean, what was the trigger for that?
Everybody kept telling me I should be a teacher. I should work with kids. I didn't grow up with a lot of guidance in schooling or a push of I can do anything I want to do mm-hmm. type. I know that when I was in high school, I wanted to fly fighter.
A pilot.
I wanted to be a pilot. I wanted to fly the F-15s. But I went to the Air Force and they said, I'm really sorry, but women don't fly. And that was a long time ago. So
yes,
they didn't. They can now. So that was one dream that I had that I didn't follow through on because I wasn't able to at that time. Mm-hmm. So I heard people say that I'm really good with kids. So I went in that direction. And again, taking the ECE classes helped me to understand as a parent everything that my kids were doing, what was developmentally appropriate and was wonderful. And the more that I got into it, I just fell in love with it. And I think that I found my purpose and I knew that I could make a difference, mm-hmm. especially for young children, and that kind of became my passion.
Mm-hmm. Well, you may not know, but our grandchildren were in one of your programs this year.
Mm-hmm.
And as an observer, as a grandparent, I can just see the excitement they had on going to practice, right? They're 4-year-olds.
Right.
But I could see them enlightened with the idea of packing up in the car, getting their shoes on and their uniforms on. And this was a big deal.
Mm-hmm.
It is really a big deal. So you've touched over 11,000 children. That's a lot of people.
Yes. My kids used to tell me that I can't go anywhere without somebody knowing me.
Well, you ever thought for running for office? So tell us more about one of your – I know you had the Olympics, Grasshopper Olympics.
Yes.
Tell us about that.
Grasshopper Olympics is the yearly event that we have in July. And I don't know how many years we've been doing it. It's probably 16, 17 years old. And it's a one-day event where we go out and we put out about between 9 and 12 different activities for the kids to do, mm-hmm. all interactive. There's a race car where they get into a box and they
do. So this is really a really big event.
It's a big event. Usually we have over 100 kids. It was a little bit smaller this year,
mm-hmm.
I think because of the heat and different things.
Sure.
But typically we would average 80 to 100 kids on that day.
Mm-hmm.
And it's just a really fun day where they get to come and check out everything that we do with Grasshopper. Mm-hmm. And then they get to go over to the Aquatic Center and swim. So it's just a nice way to invite the parents so that they can see what we offer in our programs.
Right. So there must be a tremendous amount of gratification for you through this entire process. I mean, looking back, it just has to just provide significant gratitude and excitement in your work and for the future.
It does. And I have kids who work with me that – we're in Grasshopper. They come and be my assistants,
really?
In teaching Grasshopper.
So there's perpetuity in the whole process.
Yes, and they're so excited to get to work with me because I was their coach.
Tell me, what is your vision for the future as far as Grasshopper sports?
I just want to continue to get people excited about it. I need more coaches because I still coach. It's been 20 years. All my kids are grown. I'm a grandma now.
Congratulations.
Thank you.
First child.
First grandchild.
Uh-huh.
Yes. And so I
and
just.
And the child's name? Let's get it on the
his
air.
His name is Woodrow Ace.
Woodrow Ace. Okay.
Yes. And
listeners, make a note of that.
Yes. So I'm really excited. So I want to see this program continue because I want that someday my grandson to be in these programs.
Certainly. Well, you've certainly set the path for them to do that. So tell us any other final comments on this sports, this whole concept that you've developed and brought to the city.
The whole concept has been amazing. It's just an amazing experience to know that you've had that many kids come through this program, and we're still going strong. Our classes are full. And I can't get enough people to help work to teach the classes.
Are many of your teachers parents or volunteers?
We have paid coaches. So if people want – if they love kids, and that's the thing is you have to love kids and you have to know how to kind of be with kids.
Uh-huh.
And, yeah, we're always looking for new coaches.
Well, that is just wonderful for the community, and I'm sure that – you get a lot of accolades and appropriate responses from your supervisors and within the city. There's just no question that this is a ongoing, very, 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 very successful program. And it's all caused by you and a couple of fellow workers and an idea.
Yes.
Right? And so, you know, Gina, we're going to have to take a break right now. So, listeners, we're going to take a real quick break. And don't go too far. We're going to be right back. If you are just tuning in, this is the Henry Cuenca Radio Show on KKRN 88.5 with him, listener-supported radio. And I, of course, am Henry Cuenca. And my guest today is Gina Woznica. And she is a community leader working for the city of Reading as one of her vocations. She wears many hats. And she has told us about Grasshopper Sports, which has just been a profound, positive experience for the community. Gina, in my show, I like to connect dots of people's lives.
Yes.
And we certainly listened to the acclaims that you're performing. And I know that your life was not really easy as a child.
No.
You were abused by a parent.
Yes.
At a very, very young age. And I'd like to know if you could share whatever you would like about that entire experience.
Okay. Unfortunately, it was not just one person in terms, and not just one kind of abuse. There was lots of different kinds of abuse that happened throughout my childhood. Obviously, the worst being sexual abuse by not just a family member, but other members that would enter into our house. And so,
how old were you, Gina?
I do remember probably being about 5 or 6, mm-hmm. When a family member, and then ongoing until I was in 6th grade, mm-hmm. The abuse continued, and again, sometimes by different people. Mm-hmm. And I guess I just thought it was a normal thing, a normal way that men treated people. Mm-hmm. And there was some physical abuse and verbal abuse and mental abuse just growing up. And again, I think when you're a child in a situation like that, you just sort of roll with the punches and you don't realize that it's not really how things are supposed to be. Mm-hmm. And you just continue doing what you do. I went to school and I tried to do my best. I was a pleaser, so I tried to make sure I got good grades, and I would get praise from some of my teachers. I honestly cannot remember probably kindergarten through 6th grade. Mm-hmm. There wasn't necessarily a significant teacher that spoke to me or different things like that. And I know a lot of kids will say, oh, I remember this teacher, they were wonderful. Mm-hmm. And I can't remember really any of that time. And probably I've just blocked it out. And so I remember middle school, I remember high school. And really, it was when I got into college and really became an adult that I realized that
what had happened,
still didn't deal with anything. I just said, wow, okay, well, that's definitely not how I'm going to be as a parent. That's not how I'm going to have a relationship. And when I have kids, that's just not what I'm going to do. But I didn't really deal with any of it. Mm-hmm. And I think it takes a lot of time to overcome all the different kinds of abuse.
Probably a lifetime for a lot of people.
Yeah. And you do things that you don't realize why you do them. And then once you start to learn about abuse, then you start to learn, oh, okay, that's why I do some of those things, or that's why I react that way. And so it takes a lot of time to learn about all the different kinds of abuses. And I'm still learning. Mm-hmm. I'm still trying to figure it out.
Gina, during this period, did you ever think of talking to anybody about what was happening?
I guess I didn't know. Didn't know that it was wrong. I mm-hmm. think because it had happened so often, I mm-hmm. just didn't think it was wrong, and I didn't think that anything was strange about mm-hmm. it. And I thought that that was actually how men
was
supposed to treat you. And so that was really hurt a lot of me being in relationship or growing up, because I just thought that was kind of normal. Mm-hmm. And obviously I know now that mm-hmm. it's just completely
different. So essentially, if I understand this, you just dealt with it.
Yes.
And you didn't necessarily become depressed?
No, I didn't become depressed. I just rolled with it. And I think I thought it was normal.
Yeah.
Did
you have any area of strength? Did it ever get you to the point where you were really filled with anxiety or maybe depression, where you needed some strength to grab on to something to move on? Or did you just simply move on?
I think I just simply moved on. I think my saving grace was my grandparents on both sides. I had on my maternal side, I had a wonderful set of grandparents, and we had extended family that we would get together on holidays, and it was a sense of family.
Mm-hmm.
My mom was a single mom raising three kids, and I think she did the best that she could. Mm-hmm. But when we all got together, and I think that was my grandma's part, was mm-hmm. that every holiday, if we weren't going up to my dad's side of the family, we were together. And mm-hmm. so it was aunts and uncles and cousins and mm-hmm. this big sense of family. Mm-hmm. And there was a lot of love there.
Mm-hmm.
And my grandma and I were really close. We had a really special relationship. Mm-hmm. And I think I got my love and my security and my support from her. Mm-hmm. Whether she knew or not, I don't know. And then on my dad's side, again, I had wonderful grandparents mm-hmm. that owned property. And my brother and I would go up there. And again, we were with aunts and uncles and cousins. And I think there was
a normal life in many respects.
Normal life. Yeah. There mm-hmm. were times when I would be with my aunt and uncle, mm-hmm. and I, of course, wish that they were my parents, because mm-hmm. I never knew what it meant to have parents. Mm-hmm. I didn't know what it meant to be in a loving family where you had a mom and a dad that mm-hmm. that loved you. I didn't meet my dad until I was five.
My goodness.
Didn't know what a dad was until I was five.
And through all this, in the ensuing years, you raised essentially your brother and sister while your mother was hospitalized in a hospital bed in your home. And in fact, you were running the household.
In high school.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, she had a time when she, you know,
What was the cause of her sickness?
She had a back injury.
Uh-huh.
So she worked here locally. And we were at that time, it was a kind of a time in our life when she was working, because before, you know, we had struggled. We were on welfare and different things. And she ended up going to college and got her associate's degree. And then
that was a very positive thing for her.
And she
Absolutely.
Had a job. We bought a house. We had moved up to Central Valley and things were going better. Mm-hmm. I think she felt good about herself. But then she had a back injury and had back surgery, and they put a suture through one of her nerves, so she had a hard time walking. Mm-hmm. And so she literally was in a hospital bed in our living room. And
so that's when you took charge, essentially.
When I had to take over. I had a job, and so I was in high school.
Were you going to school as well?
I was in high school, and uh-huh. then I would go straight to my job. And then after a period of time, things kind of started to get funny. Like, she would say, I need you to take me to the doctor today. And I would go, but I have to go to school. No, you have to take me to the doctor. And just different things. And she started being very random in things. And then she would get very angry. I would bring her a plate of food and something wouldn't be right. And then I would take it back and try to fix it. And then the next thing, the plate of food was against the wall. And then I had to clean it up. And I didn't understand any of that.
Mm-hmm.
And it wasn't until I ended up leaving home. I took care of...
You were emancipated at one point, were you not?
I was, yeah. I left home right before I turned 17.
And how old was your brother and your sister?
My brother is...
They were older and younger than
you? My brother's 1 year older and my sister's 2 years younger.
How did you all collaborate about the dynamics that were going on in your household?
Again, we just functioned. We just did it.
Boy,
I'd
say that's a pretty darn good trait. Just accept it and move on.
Right. I mean, we did what we had to do. And I guess, you know, maybe growing up with a single mom who had resilience, in a sense, she mm-hmm. did show us resilience. And I think that's what we did. I did what needed to be done. We had to have groceries, so I had to be able to go to the store and get groceries, and whatever I made at my job went to support the family.
What kind of a job did you have?
I worked at Taco Den there in Central Valley.
Uh-huh.
And
so you were going to school.
Going to school, working.
You were essentially running the household.
Yes.
And you were working at Taco Den.
Yes.
So you were a pretty busy lady.
Yes, I was.
How did the emotions affect you during that period? I mean, you were being pulled from many, many different directions.
Yes, it was hard. It was definitely hard. I did have a really good friend, and we're still friends now, that we just tried to support each other. And again, I didn't understand what was going on with my mom. I didn't know that she was addicted to pain medications. I didn't know that that the doctors had her on all of these things. I don't think she knew it. And so some of her responses were out of the norm of her normal kind of yelling. I mean, she was always a yeller. She doesn't handle relationships very well. But this was beyond that. This was, like I said, literally a plate of food being thrown at me and shattered against the wall. And then I had to clean it up all because I didn't put something on there right. Mm-hmm. And so I was 15, 16 years old. I did not understand what was going on. And then one day she kind of came at me and grabbed me. And it scared me. I really thought she was going to hurt me. And so I ended up leaving home. And
so what was that was the trigger for you to decide I have to leave the premises?
Yes.
So the emancipation was – there has to be some apparent parental authority for emancipation.
So this is what happened. I ended up having to go to foster care for about a week. Mm-hmm. And I had a boyfriend at the time. And so my mom said, you can either move to Alaska with your dad, which I was not going to do. Mm-hmm. And
Your father was the abuser.
My father was the abuser. Mm-hmm. So there was absolutely no way I was going to go up there.
Did your mother ever know about this?
Well, I believe as a baby, that's supposedly why they got divorced, because when I was an infant, that supposedly happened. I don't know if all of that is true. Mm-hmm. I don't know. I know that when I was 5 years old, they allowed me to go back up and be with my grandparents, but then it also made me be able to go with my dad. So mm-hmm. I'm not sure. My mom also, as a child, was abused. So I don't know. Being that there was never anything ever dealt with or taken care of, I just think that maybe sometimes people don't know how to handle that.
So when you decided to fly the coop.
Yes.
Right. What were the ongoing considerations for your brother and sister and your mother?
It ended up – she was able to end up getting physical therapy and working through, getting better. She got to a point where she was able to walk. Eventually, she got off of all of the pain medications and is able to live normal.
And is she still living?
Yes. Mm-hmm. Yes.
Is she productive? Is she working?
She is working.
Oh, wonderful. She made a real complete turnaround.
Yes,
then.
Yes.
And she was educated, got a basic degree.
She has a good job. Uh-huh. Relationship-wise, she still, unfortunately struggles with that part. Mm-hmm. She sometimes talks to all of her kids and sometimes doesn't. Uh-huh. And which it's sad because she doesn't realize that she's one that's really missing out. She's got a new great-grandbaby, and so she's missing out on that.
Are you reasonably close to your mother?
No.
You're not?
No. Yeah. I'll be there for her. She was in the hospital a couple weeks ago, and I went and I saw her and, helped do things that she needed. So I will be there if she needs me to be there. Mm-hmm. I don't know that we'll ever be very close just because we don't have that relationship.
Understood. How about your brothers and your brother and your sister? Do they have a reasonable relationship with her?
No.
They don't.
No. My brother actually does live with her, but, uh-huh. It's kind of a toxic relationship.
Okay. And Gina, very sad story, but, there's some silver lining to all of these events.
Yes, there is.
And so we're going to need to take another break right now. So, listeners, we're going to take another short break, and we're going to be right back in just a few seconds. So please stay with us. You are listening to the Henry Cuenca Radio Show on KKRN Community Supported Radio. And I am Henry Cuenca, and my special guest today is Gina Woznica. If you're just turning into the show, this is the Henry Cuenca Radio Show. So, Gina, before the break, you told us of essentially the break from the family. You moved out because of various factors that you've repeated. I want to take a step back to another part of your life that was probably not very, very familiar or another challenge. You grew up with a disease and Bell's palsy, and you were bullied and made fun of in school. Can you tell us about that whole experience?
Yeah, it was only for 1 year. It was in my third grade year, and I don't recall what brought it on. I've heard a couple different stories, which was one.
You can barely remember, right? I mean, 3 years old, it's difficult for you to remember.
No, third grade.
Third grade. Wow, little difference.
Yeah. So, I mean, I remember kids making fun of me, and half of my face was paralyzed because of the Bell's palsy. And it is a disease where sometimes it can stay forever, or sometimes you can have it for a year, 6 months. It just depends on the reasoning.
So you were treated for it.
There's not anything they can do.
Really?
No. It either goes away or it stays.
Is something genetic?
No. It's brought on by different things. And so one thing is if you have trauma during dental work, say they do a shot and it hits a nerve, it can cause the partial paralysis. Mm-hmm. Somebody else said cold wind in your ear, blowing constantly into your ear, can cause the nerves.
Are these facts, actual facts?
That's what I've heard. The dental, I did actually look it up because every time I go to the dentist, I'm just terrified.
Well, absolutely.
And so I would tell
sure.
the dentist, I'm so scared. And they're like, are you really? I've never heard of that. But I did look it up. And that part is trauma during dental work can cause that. It can happen during labor.
Well, if you push really hard.
Yeah, I mean, so there's different causes for it.
Uh-huh. So this was with you for about a year.
Yes.
And your schoolmates were not too easy on you.
No.
It must have been very difficult because you really didn't sound like you had a lot of support at home to help you offset these situations.
No.
So you took the brunt all by on yourself.
Yes.
Yeah. You're an amazing lady.
Well, thank you.
I really mean that.
Yeah, I appreciate that.
I think you're absolutely amazing. So what else can you tell us about Bell's palsy or if there's anything else to add?
No, it's like I said, half of your face is paralyzed. So sometimes when I look back at that picture and I see that picture of a half smile, it just brings back a little bit of sadness.
Do you have pictures?
My school pictures. Uh-huh. Yeah, so my school pictures will show a half, half of my face not working. So
I know that some of your best childhood memories were with your Uncle Mark.
Yes.
Right? You smile.
Yeah.
Tell us about Uncle Mark and how he fit into the whole picture.
Well, when I met that side of the family again, I was about 5 years old.
And Mark was?
Mark's my dad's brother.
Okay.
And so on that side of the family, I have my grandparents, and there were three boys, my dad and my two uncles, my Uncle Danny and my Uncle Mark. And so right at the time of us meeting that side of the family, it was, like I said, I believe I was around 5 years old, and it was like, okay, here you go. Here's a family that you haven't seen. I have pictures of me with my grandma when I was maybe somewhere between 6 months and a year old. Mm-hmm. So there had to have been some contact there. But then there was a few years where there was absolutely no contact. And so one of the first things that we did was my aunt and uncle's wedding. My Uncle Mark married my Aunt Alicia. And so that was one of the first things that we did. And that was neat to be able to experience a wedding like that.
Well, sure.
And then one of the funnest things I ever remember was when
we want to hear that.
Yeah. He and my Aunt Alicia drove down because they lived in Oregon, and they drove down here to Redding, and they picked my brother and I up and took us to the roller rink, and I had no idea how to skate. And I left with bruises all over my legs. But it was the funnest night. And then they took us to, it was either Baskin-Robbins or Thrifty's, whichever one.
And you probably had a triple scoop ice cream.
We did. And he actually let us get, it was great because he actually let us get like two scoops of ice cream.
Oh, my goodness sakes.
It was amazing.
Well, isn't that interesting how memorable that situation was. So obviously you and your uncle were very, very, very close. You had a real strong bond.
Yes. Right? And I didn't have a lot of time with him because I met him again when I was about 5 and he died when I was about 10.
Oh, so he did die. He died in an accident, wasn't it?
Yes. He died in a logging accident where actually his brother fell a tree that hit a snag that came back and killed him.
What a...
It was very tragic for our family.
Well, horrible experience.
Yeah. Left a little 2-year-old boy without a dad.
Uh-huh.
And so then, therefore, my cousin and I are very, very close.
I can see why.
Of course, I
always... Does he live in the area?
He lives in Oregon.
Uh-huh. That's close.
Yeah. So we grew up super close. And even when my uncle was alive, he would always take me on. I would go on their family vacations with him so that I could help take care of him. And he honestly treated me just like I was his kid.
It sounds that way. So I know that we have painted a picture that your mother was bedridden. She threw plates of food on the table. She was abusive verbally. But there were some redeeming things that she did teach you.
Definitely. Right? There's always something good. You know.
Can you tell us some of those things that she taught you about?
I can. And I think those are the things that I hold on to because I know that the kind of ugly times in her life were partially because of the pain medicine and parts of just how her ways of dealing with things. But there were a lot of good things that she did do.
Can you tell us some of the things?
Well, as a single mom, she every year would take us camping.
Mm-hmm.
We would always go over to the coast. And whether we slept just in sleeping bags in the sand or at sometimes we might have had a tent and been able to afford to go to Patrick's Point, that was one thing that she always made sure we did every summer. We made a trip over to the coast and we spent time at the ocean and she took us fishing up at Shasta Lake. She took us fishing.
I understand that you still fish, so that continues.
I do still fish. I love to fish. So, yeah, she just took us. She made sure that we connected with nature. She made sure that we had a very good understanding of taking care of the earth. She taught us about the Native Americans and how they really knew about how to take care of the land and how we need to respect and treat them with respect and kindness and learn from them.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah.
Well, those are very positive things.
Yes.
So there was some redeeming things that your mother passed on to you. You are married.
Yes.
And you have 3 children.
Yes.
Tell us about your children.
My children are I have a daughter, Keishla, who is 24, and a daughter, Taylor, who is 21, and a son, Cody, who is almost 18.
Mm-hmm.
And
they all live in the area here?
Close, yeah. Taylor just moved to Bend, and then Keishla, who just had a baby, lives up in Bernie. And Cody is back home now. He was in Florida for a little while. I'm back home now working.
Mm-hmm. We had mentioned earlier that your grandparents really contributed to providing a sense of family and love. And that your grandparents were really, really great people in from your perspective. Can you tell us more about your grandparents?
Yes. Well, unfortunately, I only have one of my grandparents left. My grandma is still alive. She is 87 years old.
87?
Yep. still going strong. Mm-hmm. And
she's a couple years younger than I am.
So she still lives on her own, drives. She's really doing fantastic. I'm just so grateful to have her still. Mm-hmm. And then I just lost my grandpa last November. And it was very interesting with him. It was my grandpa on my mom's side. So it was really close to my mom's mom. Mm-hmm. And my grandpa was always there. And, you know, he and I would go out to the garden, or when he would get home from logging, he'd let me look in his lunchbox and see if he still had any candy left for me. But we never had where he hugged me and said, I love you, where my grandma always did. And it was interesting after my grandma died, which will be 18 years ago, my grandpa called me one day and we talked on the phone for an hour and a half. And then every week after that, he called me and we talked for at least an hour and a half. And I would take my kids to go see him. And it was the first time that I've ever heard my grandpa say that he loved me and he hugged me. And we just started this whole new relationship, which was great. Mm-hmm. And so I felt very blessed to have different relationships with both of them at mm-hmm. different times in my life. My grandma, you know, before she passed away, I had graduated high school and she came to my graduation and she was so proud of me. And she made the comment that, you know, she knew that not everybody believed in me, but that she always believed in me and she knew that I would be something special. And that was very big words of encouragement at that time.
Well, they all seem to have paid off. What is central to your life?
Well, gosh, I think that one, obviously my kids. I love, love, love my kids, although they're now becoming adults and they have their own life. And I think that the thing that I strive for in my purpose is continuing to do things that are going to be good in my classroom. For people. Mm-hmm. Yeah. I've raised my kids. I've given them the foundations that I can, and now I'm a grandma, and I'm going to continue to show that love and affection to them. And mm-hmm. But they're adults now, and they're going to go on and make their choices, and I'm going to be that loving, supportive mom mm-hmm. throughout everything that they do in life. But I'm also a teacher, and I'm a coach, and I still do all of those things. So my focus is to continue to bring things to our community that are going to be positive influences for kids and families. Because through everything that I do, I impact the kids, but I also feel like I impact the parents.
Mm-hmm. You know, we sort of skipped over your educational accomplishments, which, you know, I think are certainly noteworthy. Tell us about your education.
It took me a long time.
What, 15 years?
15 years.
Well, tell us about them.
But started off just going through the ECE program at Shasta College, and there are some absolutely phenomenal women that run that program. And Lorraine Haas is one of the people who are still out there.
You have a master's degree, which is kind of a separator. What planted that seed for you to reach that level of education?
Well, after I finished the ECE program, I realized I could become a preschool teacher, which I did for a little while. But then I realized I could go and become a kindergarten teacher. Mm-hmm. And back then, we kept hearing about this transitional kindergarten, but we didn't really know if it was going to happen. I thought, well, I can go to school and do that. So after I finished my associate's degree at Shasta College, I started at Simpson. Mm-hmm. And I completed my bachelor's degree at Simpson. And then I was going to start the credential program so that I could become a credential teacher. And so as I finished the credential program and was doing my student teaching, I was five classes away from a master's degree. Mm-hmm. And so
you do have a bachelor's, of course.
I do have a bachelor's in organizational leadership.
Oh.
And then I have
that's your organizational skills, right, of running programs.
Yep. And then, my teaching credential, and then my master's degree is in education.
Mm-hmm. Do you see any further education in the horizon?
Mm, There are things that I would think about.
We're going to talk about that right after the break.
Okay.
We have to take another break right now. So listeners, we're not going to be long, very far from you. So please hang on. We'll be right back. If you're just tuning in, this is the Henry Cuenca Radio Show on KKRN 88.5 FM, listener-supported radio, and I am Henry Cuenca, and my guest today is Gina Woznica. And Gina, before the break, we talked about vision of further education, and you said, well, you kind of maybe thought about it, but just share with us your thoughts on furthering your education.
Well, a doctorate is very expensive. Mm-hmm. And I'm actually still paying off student loans. But, you know, as I did my master's study, I did, of course, you have to have a thesis and you have to talk about what you would do research on. And I wrote a report on childhood obesity. Mm-hmm. And that was something.
How long ago was that?
Probably 6 years ago. Mm-hmm. And when my kids were in school at Bella Vista, I was part of the parent club, and part of what we did there, we got this huge grant, and it was bringing in a fresh garden, and it was bringing in fresh food into our kitchens and a lot of homemade food, and we were offering breakfast. And so my study would have been, is there a difference with kids who are offered fresh food? Mm-hmm. And vegetables and fruits,
obviously,
and
the answer is yes,
physical activity, yep. Are we going to see a difference in their participation in school?
Right.
And even in my own classroom now, every morning I take my kids out and I do 20 minutes of exercise with them before
it.
We even start.
I love it.
And I have healthy snacks in my classroom. And I just believe that we really have to get these kids up and moving. And I have yoga balls in my classroom. And I have tables where they either stand or they sit on the floor. I have very few chairs in my classroom. Mm-hmm. Because I believe that kids' brains are going to work better when they're moving and they're active and they have healthy food.
Sure, certainly. Gina, You really resemble just a really well-constructed person. Very, very impressed. What are you not good at? Is there anything you're not good
at?
Yes,
there is.
Let's put it that way.
There are lots of things I'm not good at. But mostly, I'm not good at conflict.
Uh-huh. Aren't most of us that way?
I don't know. Some people are okay with conflict. Mm-hmm. I am not okay with conflict. I'm not good with letting people down. Mm-hmm. Not good at saying no.
Well, but I don't know whether that's a conflict. I think that's a real positive thing of meeting your commitments or letting people down.
Yeah, I don't like to disappoint people. I don't like to feel like a failure.
Mm-hmm.
So being all put together now, I'll go back to 9 years ago when I really first came out about the abuse.
Mm-hmm.
Because I was, before that, a parent. I was involved. I was doing all kinds of things. I was responsible. Everything looked good. And then I had to face, after my dad died, that he had abused me. And I hadn't dealt with it. I hadn't ever told anybody. And at that point—
You told your Uncle Mark.
Nope. I didn't. I didn't tell anybody. No.
Mm-hmm.
No. No. He would not have handled that very well.
Mm-hmm.
I didn't tell anybody until after my dad died. And then I realized that I hadn't dealt with it. I thought I had.
So you sought counseling?
I broke first.
Right.
Completely broke down.
Mm-hmm.
Things fell apart in my life. And I really, really struggled. My marriage fell apart. My family fell apart.
Mm-hmm.
I was a broken person.
Mm-hmm.
And I did. I went to counseling and I worked marriage counseling and counseling for myself. And it's taken a long time, but I'm at a point now where I can sit here and talk to you about it. And I realized that there was a lot of things that I had.
And you're still a very young lady.
Yes.
We haven't mentioned your age, but listeners, she's a very young lady.
Well, I'm a grandma.
Okay.
But yeah, I am. And there's lots of things that I'm still learning and lots of things that I still want to work on. But that was a hard season in my life. And the few years after that has been a really hard season restoring my family and restoring those relationships because they were what was most important in my life. Being a good mom, being a good wife was the most important thing in my life.
What else is there, right?
And then I ruined it all at a certain point. And now it's about rebuilding and really realizing who I am. Mm-hmm. And because I didn't really know who I was. Mm-hmm. I didn't know because of all the abuse and all the just things that I had put aside. I didn't know who I was. And now I know.
Understood.
I'm a good person. I know I'm worthy of love. Father Keith told me a quote a few years ago. He said, "You need to learn to love yourself the way that Jesus loves you."
Wow.
And that stuck with me because I was struggling so hard to understand what that meant. Mm-hmm. And so I'm learning and I'm gaining confidence. And I've been surrounded by some people. I mean, there's key people in my life. My supervisor from Reading Recreation, Teresa, has been with me for 20 years, encouraged me every day to continue to go to school, even knowing that one day I might not work for her anymore. Mm-hmm. Encouraged me.
A true friend.
Oh, yes. Oh, yes. I mean, great supervisor. This person is a person who encourages you no matter what. She's there for you. I've cried on her shoulder. She's amazing. Professors at Shasta College that have encouraged me to continue to go on. Life management, that was another thing. Stephen Covey's book.
Oh, yeah.
Responsibility. I've taught my own kids that. I tell my kids in my kindergarten class, you know, and I remind myself every day, responsibility is the ability to respond. We have the ability to respond to any situation in our life, and it's just how we do it. And that's what I've done.
We all love that. Where do you get your best ideas?
Well, God gives me a lot of them.
Well, that's a good place to start.
Yeah, but you got to listen to him. He gave me a good one the other day. I was really struggling with all the fires and all the people affected. And because I'm a teacher, I know that there's families that I have that have been affected. And it was just kind of tearing me up, and I was kind of going stir crazy. What can I do? What can I do to help? You know, try to go and volunteer and do what I can, but I still felt like I needed to do more. And I woke up one morning and God said, "You have all those books and all those crayons and all that stuff sitting in your classroom. You need to go share that." So I went, "Well, why didn't I think about that?" So I went to my classroom and I loaded up all the books that I was just going to get rid of and all my old crayons and markers and coloring books and things. And I took it down to Shasta College and asked them if they could create a kids center so that these kids could have something to do while they're stuck in that evacuation center. And so
you seem to have a strong spiritual connection.
Yes.
And this started when?
Well, I didn't grow up with it. I did not grow up with either side of my family being religious or spiritual or going to church. I do believe that I went to church at some point when I lived in Anderson, but it wasn't my mom taking me to church. So I can remember learning the songs, but we didn't grow up with any kind of religious background. Mm-hmm. So I believe I really started to go to church after my dad died. I started going to Our Lady of Mercy, and Father Jonathan, of course, was just a great, great spiritual leader there.
Happened to know him.
Yes. He's wonderful. And so I've always been spiritual. I've always known and believed. But as I go to church and as I'm more working on that relationship, it's grown so much more.
Wonderful. Gina, what is – in your heart of hearts – heart of hearts. What does bliss do?
Bliss?
Mm-hmm. Bliss.
Bliss. Bliss as in what types of things make me happy?
Yeah, sure. What makes you happiest?
You know, I just living every day. being alive every single day, seeing the blessings of every single day, being able to see my kids, being able to be a teacher, to know that I can make change by doing what I do, having a bucket list and checking it off, appreciating every single day, I think is – I learned that in September when my niece was killed in a car accident.
Oh, my goodness.
Driving to the store, and she was taken in an instant.
That was here in the area?
It was.
Really? How old was she?
26.
Young girl.
Yes. So it makes me realize that every single moment is so important. Every single moment. And we need to cherish the people in our lives and our families and do everything that we can in our community, in our families, in our lives to find the best and be the most positive. Don't focus on the negative, because there's always going to be negative. Oh, but if you focus on the positive, the and light. You see the good.
Yep. Gina, I've really welcomed this opportunity to have you on our show, and know that you have communicated a tremendous straightforwardness and difficult path that has sustained itself and just brought such unfold blessings to our society. And I thank you very much.
Thank you so much for having me here today.
For being in our show very much. And you have been listening to community-supported KKRN 88.5 FM. We are supported by listeners like you and brought to you by volunteers from the community. Are you ready to support your local community radio? To become a listener supporter, go to our website, kkrn.org, and click on the donate button, or mail a check to P.O. Box 188, Montgomery Creek, California, 96065. You can call 530-337-1101 to volunteer at KKRN Community Radio or to learn more about us. Thank you for listening to the Henry Cuenca Radio Show, where we are in earnest working to make our community and the world a better place.